You're listening to The Crime Collective.
This is a true crime podcast, so it will contain some confronting themes. Listener discretion is advised. Really? Really? I know, the boys will be very jealous that we get all the new stuff today, and they'll just have to wait.
Fuck the patriarchy.
Well, funny you should say that.
It's my preference.
Anyway, welcome to The Crime Collective and episode number 2 of the Itty Bitty Nitty Gritty with Claire and Kitty.
You.
I'm Claire.
I'm Kitty.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It's been a long time coming in this month.
It has been, hasn't
it? Feels like ages.
Yeah. Mm. And we were saying in one of the recent episodes about the good feedback that we've had.
We've had a lot of good feedback.
And I believe that it has helped to convert some people that have never listened to true crime before.
That's right. I got a couple of girlfriends who previously thought true crime was maybe a bit scary. But me just being a dickhead on air has changed that. So that's great.
Yeah.
And, of course, the quality content that we deliver.
Of course.
Month after month.
And we have so much more quality content for you today. Ooh. Because our theme is going to be all things creepy crawly, bugs, insects. Slimy critters today.
Yes.
Something a bit random.
Yeah, how about that?
And like we said, if you've got any theme suggestions, don't be afraid to throw them at us. And
figuratively.
Well, yeah, no, we don't want you to actually, especially not throwing any creepy crawlies our way.
Oh, yeah, please just hold off on that, please.
Yes, please. Now, Kitty, you're going to, like, kick us off with the story today.
I am. Yep. You went first last time. So in true Georgia and Karen, my favourite murder style, we're going to swapsie.
But we're so much better than them, of course.
Oh! Good Lord.
Maybe one day.
I could we'll never. We love you, my favourite murder. Mm-hmm. This is your fault, actually, really. Oh, dear. Right. So, yes, I have a creepy crawly tale for you today. And it's pretty gross, but we'll get through this together, folks.
Right.
Right. So we're going to take things back to 2008.
Okay.
So in late 2008, Peter Alec Cannon, a 54-year-old disability pensioner from Lilydale, which is just out of Launceston in Tassie. Tassie, I'm taking a leaf out of your book.
Yeah.
Was charged with some drug offences and had his DNA sample taken, which, of course, is standard practice when you've been charged with something. And suddenly his drug charge got much, much worse.
Ooh.
Yes. He was then charged with the aggravated armed robbery and assault, which was a cold case from 7 years prior.
Ah, busted.
Ooh. Thank you, DNA. Right, so now we're going to go back further. We're going to go back to 2001 in September.
Right.
So late spring, two hooded men disguised with hoodies entered the home of an elderly couple. They'd heard that the property was pretty easy target because they had heard that there was a safe in the property.
Oh, that old chestnut.
So criminal math. Safe equals money and guns.
Yep.
Boats and holes. So they decided that they were going to take it upon themselves to break into this property, especially because it was even more isolated than Lilydale is. So this property is located in bushland in Corolla, which is out the sticks even further.
Yes, I've actually been to Corolla.
Have you just?
I made that Turkish lamp in Corolla.
Well, there you go.
Fancy that.
Oh, how about that? So, yes, that's where it happened. These two hooded men were armed with sticks.
Like literally Stop just it. Bits of
what
wood.
What are you, 15?
Sticks.
They had sticks.
Sticks and stones. They break my bones. But, oh, my, that's
– They will break bones, though. They will break bones and certainly cause a bit of a drama. But when they got in the house, they found 71-year-old Faye Olson alone and terrified.
Oh, Faye.
Her husband was out. She initially thought it was a joke.
Oh.
Because here's these guys standing at her laundry door with like hoods over them and sticks.
Wow. Okay. I would be terrified, but maybe she's got friends that like to play practical jokes. But...
Maybe. Maybe she was expecting it to be Mr. Olsen. Uh-oh. Maybe she thought it was a bit of a...
bit of role playing.
Oh, how are you going? So anyway, she recalls that the men were poking her with the stick and demanding to know where the safe was.
Good
Lord. Oh, dear. So one of them was much... more pleasant than the other. One of them was much more angry. Mm. So the angry one tied her up with a pair of track pants and a belt. These guys are losers. So the angry man also went through a bunch of drawers and was hitting things around the house with the stick. Okay, cool.
What were they on?
Yep. So she tried to run to the phone, but he caught up with her and he grabbed it and threw it away, and that's when she was tied up with the pair of track pants and the belt. Cool.
Right.
So anyway, he managed to get $500 out of that safe, which in today's money... is probably like 510.
Well, I don't know, inflation. Oh, yeah. With all the cost of living.
The cost of living crisis. So it's probably like $600 maybe, I don't know, and $50 from her belt. From her wallet. Yeah, so not a great deal of money was actually stolen. And then after they'd raided the safe, they fled on foot. The husband came home not long after, and called the police. So when the police arrived, they obviously asked Faye about any memories she had of the attack. She'd also been, like, bashed with the stick and not very nice. She was 71. Sprightly, though, apparently. So bless her. She couldn't give a description because they had their hoods on and they were quite disguised. And given the nature of where they were, it was unlikely that there were going to be any witnesses that had seen comings or goings because they were so far out in the bush. But Senior Constable Nathan Slater, he's our first bug.
What a coincidence.
Yes. I don't know about our international friends, but here in Australia, Slaters are like those tiny little armadillo bugs.
Yeah, the little wood lice.
That roll up into it. Yeah, yeah, wood lice.
The little curly ones. That, yeah.
So we call them Slaters here. Mm-hmm. Although when I was a child, my mum used to call them piggies.
Piggies?
Yeah, and piggies.
I've never heard them called that before.
Nobody I know has ever heard it called that.
I can't remember what we call them, little roly-polies or something.
Yeah, I think I've heard that too. Mm. Anyway, Nathan Slater is not actually a Slater, I should state. He only has two legs.
Thanks for clarifying.
Two arms. I don't believe that the Tasmania police had ever had an insect actually enroll in the force. So.
He doesn't eat wood.
Yeah, no, he is a human person.
Okay, good to know.
So anyway, they did a bit of an investigation. They took some photos of the joint. The sticks were gone as well, so there was nothing on the sticks. They couldn't find them. But there wasn't really much to go on at all until Constable Slater found on the floor a big, fat, slimy leech. They're so gross.
They are rank, aren't they?
In some of the places I work, I'm a wedding coordinator for other people who don't know me, and we're quite often out in the wilderness, and I've had quite a few leeches on me over the years.
Yeah.
A very traumatizing experience as a child. My dad was a very religious person. And I remember we were somewhere up some river and they were like baptizing people in this river.
Oh, no.
And I was probably about four maybe. And all I remember is looking down at my leg and seeing all this blood and then seeing grown ass men run at me with cigarette lighters.
Oh, Jesus.
And I'm like, what's going on?
Whoa.
So I hate leeches. I hate them. They're disgusting. They're so gross.
They are,
and you can't feel them.
No.
And then apparently, like the tiger leeches have some sort of bacteria where you can get really nasty infections.
Ew.
And actually last year I went to hospital with cellulitis from a leech bite, which was horrendous.
Mm.
They're nasty things, but they're also wonderful when you're looking for a witness.
Hmm.
And this one can't talk. He was pretty rubbish actually. But what they did get from him was DNA.
Because I like to suck your blood.
I want to suck your blood. So basically this leech was sent off for analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Being 2001, it wasn't particularly a massive thing here in Tassie still at the time.
Early days, yeah.
And Pam Scott from the Forensic Science Service Tasmania was saying that they did have to – they weren't sure if it's going to work. This, by the way, is a world first.
Ooh.
Yes. So it hadn't been done before. They had to distinguish the DNA from the blood from – the DNA of the leech, because of course that's got its own DNA. Everything does.
Yeah.
So yeah, they had to very carefully decipher the DNA, and they put it through the system. No matches.
Ah, bah bah.
2001, probably not super common practice at the time. So anyway, a couple of years went by, and a journalist was talking to one of the forensic analysis people,
mm-hmm.
And said, like, did you ever catch that person? And he said, no, I'm not really sure. But it was 2 years after that even that it ended up being solved.
Right.
So what I will also say is that Pam Scott also said, and I thought this was really interesting, quite often insects are used for, like, to time decomposition and that sort of thing. But this was the very first time that a leech had ever been used for the DNA, because the lady, Faye, hadn't been bitten by the leech. It was just sitting there on the lounge room floor. So given that they were in bushland, the police put two and two together and went, yeah, I reckon that's our guy.
Yeah.
So anyway, here we go. Eventually, when Peter Alec Cannon was arrested for these drug charges, they put his DNA into the system, and then they finally, after 8 years, came up with the match.
How exciting for that DNA. Be?
Yeah, how crazy. And imagine just being like, oh, fuck my life. Like, he would have just been like, what, oh, are the odds, really? Of that?
Yeah.
I wonder if he was, like, freaking out at the time, though. Like, they're like, okay, we're going to take your DNA. I mean, if you get away with it for that long.
Oh, I guess he maybe didn't stop to think. Maybe he didn't realise.
It wasn't that really an ingrained thing back then. Like, I wouldn't have thought about DNA or anything. But anyway, these days it's common practice. So essentially that's what happened. Now, you will note that I did say that there were two offenders.
Yeah.
Well, I tried to do a bit of extra research. Basically, all the articles I could find were mostly taken from his court case in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And so they all just pretty much said the same thing. There was the Daily Mail, which I thought was hilarious. They used a term in their headline, which was crook slugged.
Nice one.
Actually, it's a leech, which I thought that was quite amusing. And I also saw it listed somewhere that it was actually a domesticated leech, so a garden variety leech.
I didn't know there was such a thing. Who domesticates them as pets?
I don't know. Like, it was just a one that you'd find around your garden, I guess. Not necessarily, but I mean, they're in the fucking bush, so what are you going to do?
Yeah.
So anyway, I tried to do a bit of extra research to find, like, where is he now? Yeah. Come on down.
Come on the show.
I didn't find anything, and I can't confirm this is the same person, but what I did find was a death notice in the paper in 2022, and it said Peter Alec Cannon passed peacefully at home surrounded by loved ones on Wednesday, the 26th of January, 2022, aged 66.
Wow.
So I did some little mathematics in my little brain hole. And I was like, okay, so if he was 54 in 2008, that checks out. May well be the same guy.
Hmm.
He only got 2 years for that extra charge.
Yeah.
And then he was released from prison. What's conflicting for me, and I know, of course, everyone, you know, you serve your time, you get out and whatever.
Mm.
Peacefully at home, surrounded by loved ones.
Mm.
Like, if you're an asshole, I don't know if you deserve that. Did I say that out loud?
I heard it, yes.
So that's a thing. But given that he's dead and never named up who his assailant was.
Oh, he never gave it up.
So Peter Alec Cannon was the nicer of the two. Remember how I said there was an asshole one?
Yeah.
A real aggressive guy, bad one. Guy, yeah.
Situation.
Aggressive one's never been found.
Oh, shit. Still out there.
Mm. And now we may never know.
Mm.
So that is the story of the DNA leech.
Woohoo!
A world first. Tassie.
Yeah, yeah. Go Tassie. That's amazing.
Oh, there you go. I tried to pad that out.
You've done very well. Yeah, and I don't think I've really heard of that one either. So.
No, well, funnily enough, my mum actually, on Easter Sunday, turns out she is a murderino after all.
Yay!
Although no one was murdered in this case, of course. But we were sitting around and I made her listen to the podcast that we did previously.
You made her.
I really did. It's not really something she'd go looking for usually, but she enjoyed it. We've converted another one.
Yay!
And I was saying about how it's going to be an ongoing thing and and she goes, oh, you should do something about that that murder that got solved down past Snug, down south of Hobart by the leech. So that's where I started. And I typed in Snug, leech, Tasmania, DNA. Nothing came up. But I did find this Lilydale one, so.
Yay.
And yay that it didn't result in a murder.
That's true.
Yes.
That's good. And thanks for the tip off. Like, we always love people to give us suggestions.
Love you.
Yay. Well done. Thank you. That was amazing.
My pleasure.
Brilliant. And it's interesting we were saying about people giving you tip offs and maybe sometimes the information doesn't quite add up, because when we were talking about doing insects, I thought, okay, I've got a good case that a friend has put me onto that fits the theme. And shout out to another Claire, but without the I. She suggested a story that involved the use of moths that were found in a car grill as evidence to prove the suspect was in a certain place where only those insects were found.
Oh, wow.
And they said that they were miles away, but unfortunately I couldn't track down any information on that one.
Damn it.
So, yeah. But I think maybe a couple of cases had been mixed up in the retelling to her. But I am going to cover.
Chinese whisper type.
Yeah, yep, I think so. But I will cover the main story that she suggested at a later date, probably as a normal Crime Collective one.
Excellent.
So thanks anyway, Claire. And I love that you've led off with a story, because I'm going more on a factual kind of basis for mine. And I had like a compilation of forensic entomology stories ready to tell you. But in the course of my research, I know, I fell down such a long and winding like hyperfixation rabbit hole, as we do. I could have done like a whole episode, but I probably would have bored people, but I found it fascinating.
It is. It really is.
But during the process, I came across two incredible women who have made huge contributions to the field of forensics. So I'm going to tell you about them, but I am still going to give you some factual stuff to start off with. So hopefully it's not too boring. Because forensic entomology, as we were saying, it's the use of insect and arthropod evidence to help determine what happened to a body. And it's become a really important tool in criminal investigation, as we were just saying.
I'm going to stop you there. What was that second one? Arthropod.
Arthropod.
What is that?
I think, well, that's... Okay, you've caught me out here. Shit. I don't know. I think – so if we're saying like a leech isn't exactly an insect,
no,
is it?
No.
So that's probably an arthropod.
Okay, gotcha.
I hope that's right.
Other stuff.
Stuff
and that.
Essentially, yeah.
Great.
And like you were saying, it's particularly important in determining the time since death.
Yep.
Which is called PMI, post-mortem interval. And that can provide or destroy an alibi for a suspect. And insects, they can also help to determine if there was movement of the corpse, the manner and cause of the death, and the association of suspects at the death scene.
Yeah, right.
And this is interesting, I think, anyway. The first recorded incident where insects were used in a criminal investigation was in 13th century China.
Good Lord.
A farmer was found murdered in a field by a sharp weapon, and all the suspects, they were told to place their sickles on the ground, and only one sickle attracted blowflies to the trace amount of blood that was hidden to the naked eye. And that resulted in the confession of the murderer.
How did they know to do that, though?
Well, just magic.
That's amazing. it's incredible. The forethought.
Yeah. Yeah,
well I done. Guess they well just done.
Yeah, put two and two together. And the first application of forensic entomology in a modern courthouse was in 19th century France, where entomological data was admitted as proof for acquitting the current occupants of the residence from where the skeletonized remains of a young child were found.
Ew.
I know. But back to the present day, there was a couple of aspects of forensic entomology that I found particularly fascinating. And you've already touched on the DNA side of it, so I won't go into that. But there's a thing called, and this is a fun one to try and say, entomotoxicology.
Okay, yep.
Entomotoxicology. So that's where, like, the larvae of flies, which are this is gross, but they're feeding on the dead
maggots,
body.
Then.
Yeah, exactly. So essentially.
Sorry, Mum. She hates that word.
It is gross. I think that's why I was avoiding saying it. So they can accumulate the drugs that were ingested by the deceased person.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And so bodies that are in a really advanced state of decomposition or are like skeletonized, they're really hard to examine for toxicological substances. And in these instances, that the larvae, the maggots, feeding on the body can be analysed with gas chromatography or mass spectrometry. And toxins, they can also influence the stages of development of the larvae. So cocaine and heroin can accelerate the larvae development.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I know, right? Yep. Whereas poisons can delay the insect colonization.
Gotcha. Yeah, so, picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah. As forensic entomologist Dr. Paola Magni said, insects never lie. Insects are tiny witnesses.
Well, funny you should say that because one of the articles I used as a source for today's story was called The Silent Witness.
Ooh, there you go.
Because he wasn't talking.
No, he didn't need to. He just needed to, like, slug it out. Yeah. And so anyway, so she is the first amazing woman that I wanted to talk about, Dr. Paola Magni. And she did her master's degree in forensic entomology at Michigan State University, but she's from Italy. And she went back and she established the first forensic entomology lab there in Italy.
Wow.
And she created an app called Smart Insects, which helps investigators identify bugs and guides them in how to collect samples. And it's been downloaded more than 40,000 times.
Is that just Google Pictures?
Probably.
Look, credit where credit's due. Well done. That's amazing. That legitimately is fucking mind-blowing.
Yeah, and she's consulted on dozens of homicide cases and suspicious deaths all over the world. And this is a bit of a strange one. In one case, she and some of her colleagues, they analysed beetle excrement to estimate the time of death of a woman. She likely died from natural causes, but her best friend couldn't let go. So she had mummified her friend's body and kept her upright in an armchair in their shared apartment in northern Italy for somewhere between 16 to 18 years.
And that was Hitchcock's inspiration for Psycho.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
It's definitely along
when
the same lines.
When you said her best friend, I thought you meant the dog or something and then there was going to be bugs involved.
Fleas
or dogs,
or something.
I was here for the dog, but she is a full-blown psychopath.
I think so. So, I mean, it's nice to have a best friend, but please
don't
do that to me.
I will never leave.
Creepy. But her most famous case, it involved the death of 16-year-old Federica Mangiapello in November 2012. She was found lying face down near Lake Bracciano, but in the evidence of any hard evidence to suggest otherwise, Did I say that right? In the absence of hard evidence suggesting otherwise, authorities concluded she died of natural causes.
Okay.
But Federica's family were having none of that. They were adamant that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. And authorities had at first suspected her boyfriend, 23-year-old Marco. What is a 23-year-old doing with a 16-year-old?
Nobody likes it when they're 23.
No. So Marco DiMuro, he had been with her the night she died. They'd gone to a Halloween party at a nightclub.
Red flag.
And at 2 or 3 a.m. they had a fight.
Red flag.
Another red flag. And they left together in Marco's car. And he maintained that he dropped her off in front of a supermarket near the lake. Why didn't he take her home? And that was several miles from her house. And he said he'd just gone straight home and he'd never been to the lake. Mm-hmm. And investigators, they weren't able to find conclusive incriminating evidence and no proof that he'd been to the lake, let alone that he had killed his girlfriend. However, when Dr. Magni was asked to help, she tested the clothing Marco had been wearing that night, even though it had been washed. It had already been through the washing machine. But remarkably, his clothing still contained clear traces of a single-cell phytoplankton called a diatom.
Right.
And that matched samples taken from the lake. And, of course, she made sure to take samples from the water at home, but no, definitely from the lake.
Gotcha, you jerk.
Mm-hmm. And she said it was a goosebump moment, the meaning of what we found. And so then authorities, they did a second autopsy on Federica. And this time a pathologist analysed her tissues specifically for diatoms. And what do you know, they discovered the same type found in the lake and on Marco's clothing. Yep. So he was convicted of the murder in July 2015 and is serving a 14-year prison sentence.
Amazing.
Yeah. And even more amazing, in 2016, she left Italy for Australia.
What?
And, yeah, she's now an associate professor of forensic science at Murdoch University in Perth.
Heck yes.
Yay. So we've got her.
And we'll just claim her like we do every Russell Crowe.
That's it. She's Australian now. Ends.
Yeah, they're ours.
And she says that despite lots of women studying forensics, there are fewer women practicing for the same reason there are less women in all scientific fields, mm-hmm. a lack of female role models. Entrenched stereotypes about scientific ability and plain old gender bias.
Well, mm-hmm. I've never heard of that. What is that about?
And so more than half of her own undergraduate and graduate students are women, and she's helped supervise dozens of theses. So I think she's a pretty good role model.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Get it, girl.
And now to something else momentous that happened in that same year, 2016, in Australia, and another female forensics role model. So fellow true crime aficionados. Fellow true crime aficionados will be aware that one of the ways scientists work to understand the impact of insect and environmental factors on human decomposition is through body farms.
Oh, I love this.
I know. So they are formerly they're known as human taphonomy facilities. And taphonomy, it's the study of how organisms break down after death.
Gotcha.
And the first one was set up in 1981 in Knoxville, Tennessee. And for those of you that might not be aware, that's where donated bodies, they're placed in various settings and then they're just studied in detail.
I love it. Yes. I've watched so many documentaries on that shit.
I know, same. But so body farms, they were just solely located in the US.
Yeah.
But of course, like the climate and the insect life there is entirely different to here.
Of course.
So, yeah, Australia and the whole Southern Hemisphere gained the first body farm at a secret New South Wales bushland site in 2016, led by then University of Technology Sydney professor Shari Forbes.
Wait, is it Blangalow State Forest? No, that's a bit low.
No, that's an unofficial, unapproved one. So she has been dubbed Australia's Queen of the Dead.
Oh, I love that for her. Please tell me she's also a goth.
I would love to say that. But
does she look like Elvira?
No, she's got like
damn it.
Short blonde curly hair. So pretty much the opposite.
She needs a rebrand.
I know, right? And I love the name of the site. So the acronym is AFTER.
Brilliant.
AFTER, Australian Facility for Taphonomic Experimental Research.
Love that.
Clever. They put a bit of thought into that. And they're also planning to expand to other locations in Australia.
Heck yes.
And it's no surprise that public interest was higher than they expected. In the first year alone, more than 500 people pledged to donate their bodies to the cause once they died. I think
what happens if you're just out for a bushwalk one day and you just trip over someone's skull and there's bugs just fly everywhere?
Well, she was telling a story about how when she visited a body farm in the US, she literally did.
Oh.
She actually trod on a body because they're just like out there. Whereas this site in Australia, it's like highly fenced. It's like security, and they put cages over the bodies so animals can't get to them.
Yeah, but then also that's not accurate then.
I think if they're studying them for specific reasons. Well,
for bugs, yeah.
If they wanted animals to get to them, I guess they would leave them uncovered. True. But she actually is more interested in the odour side of decomposition, which is really helpful for the cadaver detecting dogs.
Yeah.
But obviously entomology and insects are a big part of body farms.
Absolutely. Mm.
And she has now gone on to establish the first body farm in Canada. So go, girl.
Yes.
And that one's called the Secure Site for Research in Thanatology, which the acronym in French is REST.
Oh, she's a bit cute. And the wordsmith.
I love it.
Love that.
Well, speaking of wordsmiths, she said, someone has to speak for the dead. I chose forensic science not because of CSI or any of the exciting new programs these days. I'm much older than that. But she was only born in 1977, so she's actually not that old.
She was prime around to start watching CSI. Yeah.
But she says she chose it because I knew I would be helping victims alive or dead and helping their families.
Far out. What a legend.
Yeah. So there you go. That's my little bit more factual, but yeah.
Well, we've potentially inspired the next generation of young entomologists.
That's it.
How cool.
I hope so.
Thank you. That was amazing. I love nerding out over that shit.
Yeah, and I love that we're a good mix. I love your style.
I'm a bogan and you're very upper class.
I wouldn't say that, but
it works.
I think
lovely.
I think sometimes I over-research. I had to cut so much out of that.
Occupational hazard for you as a journalist, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. I can't help myself.
Oh, dear. Well, but thanks. That was amazing.
Yeah.
I feel smarter.
I feel like I definitely learned some out of that. But I still couldn't do it. I still couldn't be dealing with dead bodies and bugs and stuff like that.
Well, funny you should mention that, because a friend of mine started a business recently. She's got a funeral home.
Oh, yeah.
And as a hair and makeup artist myself, she did float the idea to me, would I like to get into that area?
Could you do that?
I would like to think that I could, but predominantly I said no because I thought, well, I'm really good at making bitches look slay. But I don't know. That was no pun intended, by the
really?
Way.
Really?
I've been watching way too much Drag Race. But I don't know how good I would be at just making people look realistic and alive. Because essentially a corpse is grey and like the colour is drained out of their face. So you essentially have to make them just look like rosy-cheeked and whatever. And I'm not a minimalist. I'm a blush girl. They would look like they were going to enter Drag Race. So I don't think
that's I'd be happy with that.
The career path for
not
me.
Not for everyone.
It's Plus, then I'd have to buy a whole new kit because I don't reckon you could reuse them on the living and the dead.
I don't think so.
Oh, no. Dear. But, yeah, I mean, I think, like, I've toyed with the idea myself of, like, one of our friends is studying to be a death doula, and I think that's incredible. Like, what more a noble cause could you do than to literally give someone their last makeover?
Yeah.
or like, any service for someone's last, you know. People make a big deal out of people's first things, like baby's first steps, first words, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's the last ones for me. Like, oof.
That's it.
What an incredible profession, anyone that's involved, like healthcare and all that sort of thing, anyone that's...
You've got to be a special person to do that.
Absolutely.
Mm. That's not me.
It ain't me.
All credit to them. That's it. But, and it's also, it's just like the complete opposite of a lot of what we talk about is people doing horrendous things and taking people's lives in horrendous ways. And then there's the other people that are out there saving people's lives. So,
yeah. Yes. Wow. Far out. Hats off to anyone listening that's involved in any of those professions. That is truly, truly mind-blowingly amazing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's it.
I'll be just over here getting all drag racy. She already done had hers.
Oh, I love it. Look, each to their own.
That's it. That's it.
So much fun. Right. Okay. Well, that brings us to the end.
There's our second
episode
one.
Episode two. Yay. Itty bitty nitty gritty with Claire and Kitty. Ew. And yeah, so any ideas, suggestions, send them to us either on the Facebook group or the email is tcrimecollective@gmail.com. Send them our way.
Beauty. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay. Love you, bye. Bye. Love you. Bye.
Bye. Love you. Bye.